The two nights of debate among the 20 Democratic candidates for president in Detroit disappointed a lot of people. They wanted more substance, more talk about issues important to them, and fewer rehearsed gotcha moments. Here to go over the highlights and lowlights of the debate are Michigan Radio's Rick Pluta and Zoe Clark. Hi there.
Hello.
Go easy on us, kid.
I don't have a better idea, but having 10 people on the stage questioned by three moderators would seem to inhibit any chance of a deep discussion.
That's enough, Lester. That's enough. Your time's up.
Most of them got about 7 minutes to speak during the hour squabble, or at least the lower rung ones.
Yeah.
What did you think of the debate format?
Well, look, I mean, it's unruly and it is messy because, as you said, there are 10 folks up there, more than half of which realize they need to get those jabs in. They want that 8-second sound bite because they know that that's what's going to keep them in the race. So unruly was sort of the order of the day.
I mean, yeah, they were there to, knock some of the contenders off. And we know that there will be, fewer contenders going forward. But, look, it's speed dating. And, we knew that.
Tom Perez said as much in the opening before the debate. The DNC chair basically said, speed date tonight. Fall in love. Fall in love with more than one candidate.
Well, let's talk about that, because did any of the candidates actually stand out from the others because of the debates?
Well, I hate to say, the chattering class is saying, but I think if you look at folks in D.C. and what they're talking about is that Cory Booker sort of came off as the happy warrior, and he really was one of those candidates that needed to make an impression in order to kind of stay in the race, right? And then the first night, Marianne Williamson, for good or for bad, I read a statistic that actually in 49 states, she was the most Googled candidate.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, and of course, a Michigander herself. In fact, I thought this was so Michiganian, Michigander
well,
of her.
Not a Michigander per se, but she did have a church
but
in Gross
she
Point
knows Detroit
on.
So much that, it was at the Fox Theater. Well, walking into the Fox Theater right next to the theater is the Fillmore. And guess who had bought advertising space billboard on the Fillmore? No other candidate thought to do that.
So the traditional Democrats versus the progressives fight, how much did these debates throw more gasoline on that dumpster fire?
Right. More gasoline and then more lit matches, more gasoline and more lit matches.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Look, we said speed dating. This is a sorting out process where Democrats know who these people are and more or less where they stand in the spectrum. And so they're going to have this debate about whether or not they want a centrist who is supposedly more electable by a peer, by appealing to the muddling middle, or someone who's a passionate progressive. And this was a chance to kind of test out both of those and then decide, which way they might be, they might be leaning.
And I think it was also fully on display, right? Because both nights, for at least the first 30 to 40 minutes, was about health care, which when you look at the Democratic Party, there's big divisions there, right? And Medicare for all. So especially last night with Biden and Harris talking so much. So, if you were only watching for the first half an hour, 45 minutes, because that's all you could handle, you saw those splits, because there are splits within the party about very specific issues.
Well, and also records, we've got some people in here who are very new, who don't have political histories that can be attacked. And then there are some who have very long political histories. And it did seem like there was a sustained effort to just kind of push Joe Biden off the stage. But I mean,
he's all been leading in the polls. There's a reason for that, right?
Right.
Let's knock him off his pedestal.
But any candidate who does that had better be careful, because when you're attacking Joe Biden's record as vice president, at least, that means you're also attacking the beloved President Barack Obama.
And they were critical of the Obama administration, which was surprising, considering he is, as you said, beloved by the Democrats.
And there are a lot of Democrats that I am hearing from this morning that were concerned, because it sure felt to them that a lot of time was spent talking about how Democratic policies put forward by various candidates are bad instead of taking the time about spending time talking about the current president and the Republican. Now, this is what Democrats are saying. You know, well, there are plenty of Republican strategists that are like, keep at it, keep at the infighting.
And I think Joe Biden in particular, when he was especially, you know, facing down Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, to some degree, you know, Cory Booker as well, was trying to present himself as the candidate schooled in the art of the possible, which you can talk about, you know, your grand policy dreams as much as you want, but you have to get them through the Congress, through the bureaucratic system, you know, anything like that. And he was trying to pull that off. I don't know that he did it particularly effectively.
One of the things I noticed, and a few candidates that did this, they kind of had this reset moment, like, hey, any one of us is going to be better than the current president.
That was said multiple times.
And it was like, it was almost like a reminder to the other candidates on the stage, who were getting a little rough here.
Yeah,
a little getting rough.
Usually
and
said either right before or right after someone shibbed someone there on the
I've said this before
stage.
On this program, so I'll make it a quick story, but I went to school for a little while in England, and I was in a political science class, and they were absolutely shocked by the idea that we had primaries. This is not something they do. They're like, wait, let me understand this. For a year, candidates of the same party go after each other. Right. Then they choose one candidate to go after. How does that make sense?
And not only that, but then they get up on a stage the next morning.
And endorse.
And endorse, yeah, right. Endorse the other one.
Well, talking about endorsements, have Democrats in Michigan coalesced around one candidate or another?
I think Democrats in Michigan, politicians in Michigan, are very much like the American electorate, which is no. We are just this past week, though, seeing a couple. We saw Congressman Andy Levin come out for Elizabeth Warren this week, and we saw Brenda Lawrence come out for Kamala Harris. And then a few weeks ago, Mike Duggan, the mayor of Detroit, of course, has been a big Joe Biden fan. But we did hear from Governor Whitmer and the lieutenant governor, who both said it is too early. We are still going to speed date. Whitmer didn't even say whether or not she will endorse before Michigan's primary. So both of them are holding out.
And earlier in the show, we heard from Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, who said, I have 20 friends up there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that actually, for Debbie Dingell, that's true.
And this is classic Debbie Dingell, you know, hair pulling, because she is so afraid that these primaries are going to get so fractious that Democrats are not going to be able to coalesce afterwards to, get ready for November.
So the early caucuses and primaries are going to winnow out some of these candidates down to a more manageable number, but New Hampshire isn't until February. The Republicans have their candidate. He's already campaigning. How helpful is it to the Democrats if they have this gaggle of candidates attacking each other and no one really stands out
for another
couple of months?
The DNC rules are going to winnow out the field for at least for the debates, that you've got to be polling at least 2% in some of the polls, have 130,000 individual donations. I mean, as of right now, I think, let me look at my list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there are only 7 candidates out of the 20 who are there who would qualify right now for the next debate.
Any last words, Zoe?
Oh, buckle in. It's a wild ride. We've got something like 220 days now until the Michigan primary. So
these election seasons get longer and longer.
This thing ain't over.
You guys love this.
Oh, my gosh.
There are some of us who are not thrilled with it.
Absolutely.
God, what?
We're sick, Lester. We're sick people. Right.
There's a reason
I just draft on her enthusiasm.
The resident political junkie.
I love it.
How much longer do we have to deal with this? Okay, that's Rick Pluta. He reports for the Capitol, from the Capitol. Zoe Clark is our resident political junkie, as I mentioned. Thanks very much, you two. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks, Lester. And when does the debate start tonight?
Tomorrow on Stateside, we'll talk to a professor from Michigan State University who studied police shootings and has some surprising results. And we'll talk to a writer who's working this summer on Isle Royale.
I don't worry about email. Nobody's texting me. Or if they're texting me, I'm not getting them. You know, I'm not getting on Facebook. I feel free of all that crap. It feels good.
That sounds just about perfect. I'm Lester Graham. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.